Good morning to you. It is 11 o'clock, and you are listening to your public radio station, Red River Radio. Just forgot what day of the week it was, that's all. This is time for another spotlight here on Red River Radio. And I'm Kermit Poling, of course, GM here at Red River Radio. And joining me in the studio is one of the finest pianists in the world, and someone who has been here on the air before, performed in our studios, and of course performed with the Shreveport Symphony, and that is Simona Dinnerstein. And Simona, welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you back here. And this is definitely going to be a weekend where really Shreveport's glass is going to be full. And that's a bad pun, but you'll understand why in just a couple of minutes, because at two separate performances, there's music of glass, but including one in particular special piece that the Shreveport Symphony helped co-commission. And this was a piece that was written for you, Simona,
yes, it
right?
was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How many orchestras were involved in the co-commission? You know?
There were 12 orchestras that co-commissioned, and this is actually the last co-commission performance.
Okay, so you've been performing this for a couple, over the course of two seasons, right?
Last season. Started last September, a year ago. Yeah.
So, and this has become, it's interesting because over the last, I don't know, decade or so, the idea of having multiple orchestras joining in and commissioning works together and kind of joining in on the as a team has become a pretty popular.
Definitely. I don't know if there have been, I've not heard of as many as 12.
No, that
joining
is a
together.
Large consortium.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, yeah.
So talk about this piece then, because it's obviously special to you, and you're doing another work on the program, Concerto by Bach, and the two pieces do relate.
So when Philip Glass and I initially spoke about him writing a piece for me, I had the idea of him composing a piano concerto for piano and string orchestra and pairing it with a Bach keyboard concerto, which is for the same combination. And he really liked that idea. So I chose the G minor Bach concerto, and he thought that that would work very well. And then he was supposed to write a 20-minute concerto to go with it, and in the end it wound up being almost 35 minutes long, and it's just a magnificent piece of music. And while I would say that there isn't a sort of thematic relationship between the Bach and the glass, I think that there are very interesting ideas that they have in common, and especially as a performer, there are interesting relationships between the two pieces as an interpreter.
And what are those?
So, for one, both pieces are extremely polyphonic and contrapuntal, and the piano is part of the texture of the orchestra. Mm-hmm. So it's not piano versus orchestra, it's piano in dialogue with various parts of the orchestra, each section, violin one, violin two, viola, cello, bass, they all have independent lines which are talking with each other and with the piano. Other things that are in common is that in the score of both the Bach and the glass, there's really very little indication about how to interpret them. There's very little regarding articulation, dynamics, tempo, phrasing. And so depending on who's playing it, it will sound quite different. And I really like that. It really allows for a lot of imagination on the part of the interpreter.
Mm-hmm. And Glass is a composer. Of course, when he first burst on the scene, it seemed like you heard about him everywhere. And he was, you know, top Billboard. All of his recordings that you would hear, a lot of recordings of glassworks, television specials, that type of thing. In more recent years, at least in this area, there's been sort of a resurgence in interest in his music. I know South Arkansas Symphony, Marshall Symphony, the Summer Music Festival, they've all done other concertos by Glass, and I take some responsibility for that programming, but it was really funny when Michael came in here talking about this season. He said, "We're going to do some Glass this year." I'm going, "What?" It's like, "Hey, wait a minute. We're all thinking along the same lines." But one thing that has been just rewarding from that standpoint is audiences love his music for whatever reason. His writing strikes a particular chord, and whether it's the harmonic changes or the rhythmic energy that goes underneath, because he always has some sort of a pulse that's going on. For whatever reason, it strikes a resonant chord with audiences as well. At least I think so.
Yes. Well, I think that he's responsible for a completely new genre of music.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about many composers. I mean, we call the music minimalism. It's not a term that he uses.
Yeah.
But basically, I think that his music reflects our time. And there's a kind of... There's definitely a relationship between his music and Bach's, and that there's a type of purity to it,
mm-hmm.
but also a real deep emotion and humanity. And this is a person who has come from the Western tradition, but also really spent a lot of time studying Eastern music.
Right.
So you hear that fusion. And the music, this particular piano concerto, is extremely personal. It's really, there's something about it that is, by the end, by the third movement, at the end of the third movement, it's really almost, I would say, transcendental.
Mm-hmm. The last movement makes a reference to Arvo Pärt, another composer that many people might consider to be minimalist as well. Although we went through different periods. Talk a little bit about that relationship.
The third movement is dedicated to Arvo Pärt.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Pärt and Glass are friends, and Glass has a tremendous amount of respect for Pärt's music. So it's, in a way, an homage to Pärt, because it has a drone that continues throughout the whole movement, this low, very low bass C on the piano that is also echoed in the double bass. And Pärt uses a lot of drones in his music.
Oh, yeah.
So it has that quality of being a little bit like Pärt, extremely slow moving. The pulse is very slow. But at the same time, it is quintessentially Glass's language. And it's a really transporting music. It's incredibly difficult to play, even though there are almost no notes. I think that the thing that's hard about it is that everybody in the orchestra and the pianist and the audience have to have extreme focus, because you have to really be in the moment when you're playing it. You have to listen to everything that's happening. And at the same time, as an interpreter, you have to keep in mind the architecture of the entire movement.
Sure.
So it's this exercise in being present and also thinking ahead.
So amazing music by Philip Glass. And as you mentioned, the Bach G minor concerto on the concert as well. I would be remiss, and I'm sure Michael is expecting, since he's not able to be here, he's actually conducting an educational concert this morning in the same venue, First Baptist Church in Shreveport. There is a tie-in also to this symphony that's on the concert, and it's Mozart's Symphony No. 40, which is also in G minor, a very, very special key for Mozart. He only wrote two symphonies that were in G minor. Actually, only wrote two minor symphonies, and they're both in the same key. So there's a great significance in that form, and it's also one of the later symphonies that's also so well known, a piece that the audience will immediately recognize. And I will say, as a longtime symphony musician, also the kind of a piece that, you know, gets done so often, at least when you're in school and all that, we'd make up little words, you know, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's a Mozart. But if you've heard that before, it's absolutely gorgeous and very, very passionate work. And when you consider it from the standpoint of, you know, the classic era, sometimes we tend to forget that even though there's a lot of structure and form in the classical music, there's also an awful lot of emotion and heart in that music as well. Not the way we think of romantic composers, but it is certainly there. So that symphony is also part of this performance. That concert is tomorrow evening. It's at 7:30, and it's First Baptist Church in Shreveport, which is a beautiful venue. If you've not yet heard the symphony performing in the hall, of course, the normal hall would be Riverview Theater. That's undergoing renovations. So First Baptist Church is working with us. And it has a very European concert hall kind of acoustic to it.
Yes, yeah, it's
lovely,
a beautiful acoustic.
And of course, it's a beautiful hall to look at, and the symphony fits very, very comfortably there. So that, again, 7:30 tomorrow evening. Now, if you are interested in tickets or if you want to learn more information, there's actually all the program notes and Information about Simona on there as well. Go to ShreveportSymphony.com. You can also call 318-227-8863. That translates to T-U-N-E on your phone. So that is tomorrow evening. Of course, that's part of our series concert. Sunday, as part of the Knoll Foundation Chamber Series, you will again be performing Music of Glass, along with Jennifer Carcillo, who everyone knows from within the orchestra, also Michael Butterman's wife, a very, very fine violinist. Talk a little bit about that program.
Yes, well, we're doing a beautiful program that juxtaposes the music of Glass and Beethoven. And actually, it's interesting that you mentioned the Mozart symphony, because there are elements in both that symphony and in the Beethoven sonata that I'll be playing with Jennifer, which is the sonata number 10 in G major, that have foreshadowings of minimalism, where they use, both Mozart and Beethoven use these motives that repeat and evolve. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also there's a texture of a kind of, almost a kind of turning motoric texture underneath that's continuing all the time, in the way that Glass uses that too. So you could say that Beethoven and Mozart are foreshadowing, and Glass is looking back too. It's nice to think about time moving in two different ways. So the program with Jennifer, I'm going to play a solo piece by Glass called Mad Rush, which is a magnificent piece of music that he initially wrote, I think, back in the 70s for organ. He composed it for a special ceremony in New York City at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, where the Dalai Lama was going to speak. And they commissioned him to write a piece of music that he would play as the audience waited for the Dalai Lama to arrive. But they had no idea how long it would take for him to arrive. So they said, could you please write a piece of music of indefinite length? And that's what he did. And then after that, he made it a piece of definite length and published it. And now it's played on various instruments, but including the piano. So I'll be playing that piece. And then Jennifer and I will play a fairly recent piece that he wrote called Pendulum for violin and piano, which is a beautiful piece. Then after that, we'll do the Beethoven Sonata number 10 in G major, which is my favorite of all of the Beethoven violin and piano sonatas.
So that is Sunday afternoon now. It's at 2 o'clock. Those of you who attend this series regularly, it's an hour early, so keep that in mind. It is open to the public, a free concert. And, of course, that's sponsored by the Knoll Foundation, who also contribute wonderfully to Red River Radio as well. So 2 o'clock in the Anderson Auditorium at Centenary College. And, of course, that information is also available on the Symphony website. So two wonderful concerts over 2 days, one of a symphonic nature, one the intimacy of chamber music. So it's a great weekend, really, really lined up for you. Again, information is at ShreveportSymphony.com for tomorrow evening's concert. Of course, that's part of the Willis Knighton series, the Masterwork series of the orchestra. And tickets are available for that at the same number, 318-227-TUNE, or at ShreveportSymphony.com. Michael Butterman, music director of the Shreveport Symphony, will be conducting that concert, of course. Simona, anything you want to add about the weekend since you're here?
Well, I'm really happy to be here. I have to say, I always love coming to Louisiana. I just think it's a fantastic place, and I am very, very, very fond of live oak trees. So I've been loving what. Yeah. And also, I'd like to mention that this program that I'm playing, the Glass and the Bach Concertos, I recorded it this past year. It's on a CD or download or stream called Circles. And I recorded it with the co-commissioning orchestra with whom I gave the world premiere. They're a string orchestra in Boston called A Far Cry. And so you can find that anywhere that they sell music.
Great.
That's true. So there you go. You have an opportunity to get your own copy of this music that you can listen to at your leisure. And you had another relatively recent recording that came out with Havana.
Yes, right. The year before I recorded, it's called Mozart in Havana. And I went down to Havana and recorded with a fantastic orchestra there called the Havana Lyceum Orchestra. And we recorded two Mozart piano concertos. And I actually then took them, the orchestra, to the United States. They had their first U.S. tour with me, and we played 11 concerts on the East Coast.
That's very cool. It's sort of a form of outreach to introduce, you know, an orchestra that, of course, not many people would have been familiar with.
Definitely. And you know, in our country, we are mainly familiar with Cuban music that's popular music.
Right.
We don't know about their tradition of studying classical music, and it's a very long tradition. And this particular orchestra has ties with the Salzburg Mozarteum. So they have trained over there, and what's remarkable about them is that though they're playing on really inferior instruments, I mean, they can't afford to have good instruments, so they have like sort of mass-produced string instruments from China and things like that, and they don't have enough money to replace their strings. They do things like tune low. Sometimes they were tuning as low as 338 to preserve their strings so they wouldn't break. And some of them had used telephone wire for strings. But despite all of that, they have this golden, glowing sound that they achieve just by their sheer musicianship. So it was such a pleasure to work with them. And I'm actually going to be going back to Havana next season to perform with them for the 500th anniversary of the city of Havana.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's amazing. You have to really want to perform, to go through all of that trouble with instruments that are not in great shape and have to come up with imaginative ways to string an instrument. I mean, that shows you their dedication and interest in the music.
Definitely. They love to rehearse too. So when we recorded that, the two piano concertos, we spent, I would say, about 12 hours rehearsing before we even recorded. And that's just remarkable. I mean, you don't see that with orchestras here.
Sure.
And so it's a different kind of idea about art.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'm glad you could find time to make a return trip to Shreveport for this.
Looking forward to it.
As am I. So again, tomorrow evening's concert, Glass and Bach. The symphony is going to play Mozart Symphony Number 40. And that Glass piece again is a work that was co-commissioned with the Shreveport Symphony and 11 other orchestras. So you'll be aside from the people who've heard those first 11 performances, you'll be one of the first in the world to get to hear it live in performance. And then Sunday's chamber concert, which is a free concert at 2:00 in Anderson Auditorium with Jennifer Carcillo and, of course, again, Simona Dinnerstein. So, Simona, thank you so much for being here. It's been great having you
on the air. Thank you. It's great talking with you.
And if you are with an organization and you have an event coming up and you'd like to be featured on a spotlight, just give us a call at 800-552-8502.